As crazy as it is to say, after almost 5 hours of podcasting over the weekend, we are back. We got a lot more work to do here. 6 teams still that we haven't done off-season previews for. But first of all, make sure that you go back and listen to the mock off-season with Danny, Dan Feldman, Kevin Pelton. It's much better than this show is going to be, even though this show will be good. That is our signature episode of the year. So definitely go back and listen to that if you haven't yet. But if you already have, here is some more, and hopefully this will be an even better preview, kind of informed by some of the things that we saw on the market during the mock-off season. Danny, have your vocal cords recovered yet?
My vocal cords are always ready, Nate. Sadly enough for everyone.
All right, well, a reminder, too, we are sponsored today by the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. Really cool product I'm looking forward to telling you guys more about. And, of course, our friends at Indochino and Betterment as well. So let's start with the New Orleans Pelicans. They have $24 million in space. That does not count outgoing free agents Ryan Anderson and Norris Cole. They also have Tim Frazier as a restricted free agent, but since he was only on the team for less than a year, they'll have to use cap space to re-sign him unless he gets less than, basically $1.5 million. And then Eric Gordon has a huge cap hold, and the reporting has indicated they're not really going to make much of an effort to bring back Anderson or Gordon, although it kind of makes more sense to me the more I think about it, and then I see kind of what's out there on the market, because they could have the option of retaining those guys, and since they have their bird rights, they could overpay them by so much for 1 year or even 2 years that those contracts, just because they're shorter time frame, might look better than some of these other contracts that are going to be handed out.
All that is true, and another major consideration for New Orleans that I dealt with being their GM in the mock-off season is that they have a lot of long-term money. Between Davis, Oshik, and Ajinsa, they have more than $46 million on the books for next year. So committing to players for beyond this year is sticky, because then you start to get into things, because that number I said with 46, it doesn't include Drew Holiday, it doesn't include Tyreek. So the commitments they make this year really could curtail them next year, and the assumption is that they will have a better season and they will be more desirable to free agents. So I agree with you that if the market is weak for Gordon or Anderson, it would be wise to make them that kind of a hilarious one-year offer, and it would be wise for them to consider taking it. But if their market is robust, then they should absolutely decide on that.
Yeah, their 2017 space, they could have well over $50 million in space then, but they basically, their team would be Anthony Davis and Buddy Hield and Quincy Pondexter, who knows what his health status will be at that point. I think my plan actually would be, I would be fine overpaying guys for 2 years right now, and then this is not a free agent destination, then try to get into the market in 2018, and of course, at that point, they have hanging over their heads 2020. The summer of 2020 is when Anthony Davis can exercise his ETO on the last year of his contract and become a free agent again. So really, they have time, and I don't actually like not being that good just in the abstract. Now for people's jobs, it might not be that good, but not being that good next year, I think would actually be okay to get another draft pick in who could be maturing into a starter. And then if Hield is a starter and you have your 2017 number one pick as a potential starter, then in 2018, if you have some flexibility, bring in a free agent or two. And with AD, you're looking pretty good right as you're getting to the point where he might start thinking about leaving. Because if you are still bad and he's making noise that he wants to leave, it's really probably the 2018-19 trade deadline would be the point at which you would have to try to move on for him, that you could still get something before he gets too close to being a free agent.
And some people might listen to that and think, wow, they're focusing a really long time out. But if you have a general manager job, especially in a place like New Orleans, that's something you have to be thinking about already, because those are very real concerns, especially when you have a franchise level player who will be still in his 20s at that point, who you need to make sure is happy when he actually has a decision to make.
So in the short term, what they need, hilariously, is a better center. They just have so much money tied up in just bad value contracts, whether it's a Ajinsa, who is, kind of a third center type, maybe a decent backup center, you could say. He kind of vacillates between those two. And then obviously Oshik is another one who's making $10 million for the next 3 years. So the fact that they could use a better center is pretty remarkable. If not a center, they need like a good backup big who could play alongside Davis. 3 and D on the wing is the number one thing that they always need, The only time they've been good is when Pondexter gave them that for like a 3-month period. I'm not counting on him. I'm not counting on Evans as being good. If my mission is to be as good as we can this year, I feel like you got to get insurance policies for them. But now you're starting to run out of money. I mean, you don't even have enough for one max contract. And that's like as crazy as it is to say when you see what the market is going to be. If you just brought back the exact same team as last year, granted, you have a ton of health risks, but at least I think you would have more upside doing that than you would trying to just sign free agents with that $24 million. I mean, maybe you could get like one starter, and it might not even be as good as like Gordon and Anderson combined.
And if you go the kind of retention route, you also get the larger mid-level exception to use and a couple other team building tools, which could be useful. But of course, the consideration there is also that I don't think Eric Gordon necessarily wants to come back. He probably would for a one-year deal if the market is tepid enough. But when players are unrestricted free agents, to a point, you are at the mercy of what other people are willing to offer.
Yeah, that's obviously the case as well. And I mean, even Gordon and Anderson for 2 years, but it looks like that's not the direction that they are going in. So let's say that Anderson, they move on from Gordon and Anderson, and because they have their bird rights, they could basically pay them whatever they wanted until you started getting into the tax, but that's probably not going to happen. Let's say they lose those guys. Now, so you need that 3-and-D guy, you need a good big, hopefully a combo big, and then
backup point guard?
Maybe. They probably need one of those. Either it's got to be Frazier or and Evans could kind of play as a backup point guard, but you probably don't want him playing too many minutes with all the kind of degenerative knee stuff that he has had. So who are you looking at here? I mean, I think the other thing they could do too, Norris Cole has a $5.8 million cap hold. He's another guy where we saw kind of what backup point guards were going for. Maybe you just agree with him on another 1-year deal early on. I mean, part of the problem with these 1-year deal guys is you can't trade them because they would lose their bird rights. They could veto it if they wanted to. But I think maybe they could probably do better than Cole for even a 1-year $5.8 million deal, don't you think?
I think so too. But yeah, so if yeah.
They could just pay Tim Frazier that. I think Tim Frazier is probably better than
I would agree with you.
Than Norris Cole.
Yeah, so in terms of a combo guy, I would focus more on players that would be willing to take short-term contracts. But if you're willing to overpay them, Lance Thomas is interesting, a guy that I do really like. Jared Dudley, if he wanted to go to a situation where he's going to play more, because he would probably start. He'd be the presumptive starter on this team. But a lot of guys are going to be looking for years. Like Gerald Henderson, I think, would be a really nice kind of fit with them. But I think this is when he's going to want those years.
Yeah, maybe, but maybe it's 2 years, you know, and you could, like, 2 years, $30 million for somebody, or even 2 years, $40 million for a Luol Deng, or, Deng might even get more than that, who knows, but, or, you know, 2 years and $24 million for, like, Lance Thomas or something like that, and maybe he doesn't work out, but I like the fact that he's combo-y enough that if Pondexter actually is healthy, those two guys can play next to each other, too. Jeff Green is someone that they could look at, hopefully in the lower end. I mean, he'll probably get overpaid by the Clippers to return because they have his bird rights and they can't replace him.
But, and he's also not a 3 or a D, but that's okay.
Matt Barnes at the lower end could be someone who would fit in. You mentioned Henderson, Jared Dudley, Solomon Hill, those type of guys. Although I like the guys who got a little bit more 3 to them out of that group. The other question, too, is now they have Buddy Hield at the 2. I mean, that's maybe why they're going to let Eric Gordon go is because they feel like he's just, you know, he's 22. He's just going to start at the 2. I don't know if I buy that that's actually going to work, and I don't think he's going to be ready to play NBA defense. And, you know, it's going to be an adjustment period for him, despite the fact that he is at 22. He's supposedly more ready. That historically is not particularly shown to be the case. And they've got Evans too. So I think you're probably fine at the 2. And I think they should focus on getting a combo forward. And then I think the center market is much less, robust than the wing market is. So I think you can kind of bring in one other option and then Ashik and Ajinsa and whoever else you bring in can kind of compete.
Along the lines of being patient, something else they could consider is just making an aggressive offer on one or two restricted free agents who are a little bit younger that might tie in. I don't know that there's necessarily a perfect fit. I thought a little bit about Mo Harkless there.
Yeah, Demo might be good there too as a combo big, could play next to Davis.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Or a more traditional center. He could be okay in that role, but I mean, how much is it going to take to get, you're basically going to use up all your cap space on, if you're going after any kind of restricted free agent who's any.
Yeah. And so the other cap consider.
Oh, you know who else I might consider for them is Dwight Powell. I think he could actually be an okay fit for them too.
Yeah. I'd like a little bit more defense if you're going with a guy who can't shoot. Yeah. But,
he could shoot. I mean, he could theoretically shoot, although he's already 24, but.
So the other thing I have to mention with them, and this will be a familiar refrain for some of you and in this podcast, that they could also do a renegotiation and or extension with Drew Holiday if they want to lock him up for future years. It is kind of a weird time to do that considering his injury history, but the point guard market is always going to be ridiculous, and if they could, you know, come to an agreement where he gets a little bit of a bump this year and then locks in for a year or two, I think that could be useful for them.
Yeah, Drew just turned 26, so he'll be 27 when he becomes a free agent next year, and maybe with his injury history would be interested in doing that. And yeah, you're taking a risk, but this is a team that has to take risks, given where they are, some of the bad money that they have tied up, the fact that they don't have any young, cheap draft picks available. Another thing that they might do, too, is try to dump Omer Asik's contract. We mentioned he's got $30 million left over 3 years before there's mercifully a team option on the last year, or I think it's a non-guarantee, but he's 30 already. I don't really expect him. He struggled with some injuries, but I don't really expect him to bounce back. He's had two pretty crappy years in New Orleans now. So I kind of look at him as dead salary, but if you're New Orleans, what's like a fair price to get rid of him?
I know Brooklyn wanted a first round pick from me in the mock, and I think that's what people ask for. But when you consider the uncertainty with their team and the fact that if it's protected, it might need to be for future years, I don't think I'd give that up right now. And the other possibility, while we don't know it obviously for sure, is that the new CBA will bring a new amnesty. And if ownership is willing to pay it, Omer's one of the more perfect guys for that.
Yeah, that is another concern. Although I think it is less likely, because part of the reason that there were the amnesties before was because of the luxury tax being an issue, because so many teams were kind of capped out with no flexibility, and because teams are already kind of having trouble spending up to the cap, I think there's less kind of just league-wide need for it. So I think there's less of a chance we'll see that as compared to previous CBAs. But yeah, it certainly is a possibility. I mean, I think even if you have to give up one first-round pick because you know you're not going to be that good. I mean, and they don't really have any kind of like young prospecty guy under contract that they could attach to him to dump him. I would much rather have a first round pick than whoever I can sign for $10 million a year for the next 3 years. So I think you probably got to just hold on to him. Maybe if you get into the last year of that, again, we talked about 2018 might be a year for them to really strike when the cap flattens out. There's not as much space around the league. Then maybe you could stretch Asik, or you could dump him at that point if you really have a free agent that you want to go after. Let's do some quick housekeeping here, and then we'll move on to the Wizards.
Sure. So they have non-guarantees or partial guarantees. Tony Douglas, who is in mid-July, so they'll probably have to make that decision early on. And then Luke Babbitt is only partially guaranteed for $200,000. I expect that they'll keep him just because his price isn't that high.
Yeah, and they might even keep Douglas, too. I mean, those guys are pretty much minimum contracts, so they're not taking up that much cap space for them. And, you know, they don't really have much in the way of assets going forward. I think, you know, a lot of this franchise, this was their time. You know, if by some chance Buddy Hield were to mature into, like, a lower-level all-star type of player, then this team is looking pretty good going forward. If he's just, like, you know, at best, like, kind of an average two, then, you know, they kind of blew their one chance at really getting better, finding that second star to go alongside AD. And again, that would have been my singular focus. And that's kind of why I didn't like for them Buddy, because I think he has a lower upside than Jamal Murray, who they also could have drafted. Or even someone, I mean, Marquise Chris isn't a good fit with Davis, but he has a little more upside even.
One other quick thing I want to note with them is that while I would understand the drive to get somebody like one of those more max level guys, like let's say Batum or Horford, the problem is even with them, the Pelicans aren't going to be super good next year. And so you're getting into the part where their contracts become albatrosses without getting the surplus value at the beginning.
I will get to the Wizards in a moment. But first, we have a new sponsor that I'm incredibly excited to announce, the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker. It's the world's first home body scanner. actually heard about this product from a doctor friend of mine. We often do these little fitness bets to kind of keep each other motivated working out. So I went to the website and I was so impressed that I just ordered one instantly. And then when they emailed me about my order, I actually emailed them back and asked if they're interested in advertising on the podcast. So I went in on Saturday and I got scanned, hung out with the CEO for a while and found out a lot more about the product. It's unbelievable. It gives you measurements for every part of your body, tells you your body fat percentage, and probably the best thing is they give you a heat map when you scan yourself again for where you're gaining muscle and losing fat. So you start a fitness program, it used to be you'd have to rely just on the scale, and weight is just a terrible measure of how your fitness is progressing, and it's also hard to see results at first with the naked eye. Naked Fit can show you exactly where the differences are. In as little as a week, you're going to start seeing results. Results are what motivate you to keep going. So I got scanned on their current prototype. It's going to be available in the spring of 2017, but you can order it now and save $400 off the eventual $999 price and another $50 by going to naked.fit/capspace. Naked.fit/capspace. You remember Capspace? We talk about it all the time on the show, including 8 million times during this episode. That lets them know that you came from us, gets you that discount. And there's more to it as well. Once you sign up, you can get your own referral code. And then if you share it on Facebook, tell your friends. For every one of your friends that signs up for one as well, you get $50 off, and they also get $50 off as well. I'm going to want to buy it now because that $5.99 price is only available through July 4th. After that, it goes up to $6.99. And all you need to put down right now is a $95 deposit to lock in that great price for a product that's going to revolutionize your fitness. I'm really just so excited to have this great product on the pod. And you can order yours at naked.fit/capspace. That's naked.fit/capspace.
So Washington, oddly, a team that has had more focus on their offseason than just about any other team. And now it's been reported Kevin Durant is just not even going to have a meeting with them. And that's probably good for them because they can now just move on to some of their other priorities. If it was a low chance of getting him to begin with, now they're not just waiting around. They in theory have five starters, maybe not the greatest starters, but they have John Wall, Bradley Beal, Porter at the three, Markieff Morris at the four, and Gortat at the five, all guys on pretty reasonable contracts. Beal has that cap hole. He's going to get maxed out. But for now, they basically have about $28.7 million in space. They need just backups pretty much at all the positions. I think also just an upgrade as a three, because I don't think that Porter is really proven yet that he's like a high-end starter. So we'll see there. And one of the things that they really can benefit from and that the mock off season kind of crystallized for me is how valuable the early bird rights on Ramon Sessions and the actually full bird rights on Garrett Temple are, considering their ability to exceed the cap to overpay those guys, but their cap holds are pretty small, so you can use cap space first. I think they're going to want to agree with those guys early on.
Right, and those guys, I think, combined for about $3 million in cap holds, and so that means the Wizards will have about $28 million in space if they keep everyone together. And what I find intriguing about their offseason is, this was of course true if Durant came, but it's almost as true with anybody else, is that outside of the one and the two, if they can convince any good player, let's say like a real max level player to come, I think they can make the rest of the roster work. Like, let's say even Hassan Whiteside doesn't make sense with Gortat, but is just a good player. Then Gortat is at a reasonable contract and you can move him and you can use that space for something else. Or you can just keep both of them and just have a really good backup. And so I like that about the Wizards, is that they have this kind of malleability, which is interesting, especially because Porter can play both forward positions. But the problem is that you need somebody to say yes.
Yeah, and I think another thing that the mock off season crystallized for me is a lot of those guys, Horford, Batum, Chandler Parsons, like those guys, maybe not so much Parsons, but definitely those guys, Conley, who can get a fifth year on their max contract with this huge bump, are just going to stay home. I think that's probably what's going to happen for most of those guys if their teams come correct and give them the absolute most that they can. So, and then even if they don't, and this is even guys that you're probably overpaying at this point, right? Guys like Batum, for this max contract, even if they don't return, the Wizards to me are way down the list of suitors. They're behind Boston, they're behind Dallas. You might even say they're behind the Lakers, they're behind Houston to me.
There are a lot of teams, Golden State maybe as well, depending on what they do. The Spurs maybe, like there are a ton of New York maybe you could even say is a superior destination at this point. The Bulls would be like, and so I think the Wizards are kind of, you can make arguments for any of those, but they're kind of at the low end of that group to me as far as the argument in coming there. If they had just had a better season and just lost in the second round last year, we'd be thinking about this free agency for them totally differently.
Yeah, and a lot of that is also can be explained with the idea of whether they would be desirable for restricted guys to be the offer sheet team. Like, let's say Harrison Barnes, if he goes to an offer sheet, like, he's probably not going to choose them over, let's say, Minnesota or Indiana or whoever.
Right.
And that's the problem. You want to at least be that team. And I have them a little bit higher in the pecking order than you do, but being a little bit higher and not the top is a problem because the number of max level guys in this class is like 3. So if you're not at the top, they're not, and especially if at least, let's say, 2 of those guys return home, then it doesn't really matter if you're not first, you're last. And so it is a challenge for them. And the other balancing act for the Wizards, again, this goes back to the idea of optimism, is they will theoretically, if they don't spend long term this summer, they will have space again in 2017. And the question is that worth it? Is it worth it to basically keep your powder dry? Do you think that you'll jump up enough on the totem pole either by the other team spending or by increasing your own profile to justify that?
Yeah, in 2017, they would be looking at $59 million in room, but now you take about $24 million of that off for Bradley Beal, and then you still have any other contracts that they sign this year. I mean, I would not be trying to get into the market really. I mean, this is another team I feel like that just, Wall was injured, he didn't play as well, Beal missed a bunch of time. I mean, as sad as it is to say when they've been focusing on this offseason for so much, I actually would probably just try to bring guys back for the next 2 years. And again, 2018 would be when I would be looking to strike with this team that is not marquee. And then you hope that maybe Wall, Beal just look so good by that point that people really will want to go there. And maybe you could say in 2017 you keep the flexibility of it. But like, these guys have to get good. It's a walk, crawl, run, right? Like, these guys were running and now they're walking, almost crawling, and they got to get back to running before you can hope to really get anybody who's going to be that awesome as a free agent. So, but then you might have overpaid so much that you don't have any space left to have even gotten to be decent. So it is a little bit of a vexing conundrum. One thing I disagreed with you on here in our outline was, you thought that the cap hold for Jared Dudley at $8.3 million was too expensive. I actually think that's a pretty good value, and that the ability to just keep that on the books and then to overpay him by a ton for a year or two is something that could be very worthwhile for them. I mean, he got in the mock-off season with the Rockets, he got 1 year, $15 million. I think like something like that with the Wizards, but they're only using $8.3 million of cap space because of his hold, would work well. And then you still have about $20.9 million to work with. I think that's a value contract for a guy like Dudley, at least in terms of the cap space opportunity costs.
I didn't expect him to go with that kind of a contract. And you're right, that if that happens, it is a possibility.
I mean, even two years, $30 million partially guarantee the second year. I mean, I because of the fact that both he, Sessions, Temple, I would really overpay him for, I might pay him 1 year, $8 million or something for Temple just to keep him on the team because he costs so little with his cap hold. Sessions, I'm throwing at least 2 years early bird, so that's like 2 years, $13 million. Might even throw a third year on there with him just to keep him on at that small cap hold again because he only costs $2 million against the cap until he signs. I'm really going to overpay for as long as it's a 1 or 2 year deal for Sessions, Temple, and Dudley, all of them. And then, because you can have all those guys, now you're looking pretty good with your bench. Basically, all you need is a backup center, and that market is actually pretty tepid this year. And then you can just kind of go luxury shopping, maybe try to find an upgrade for Porter at the 3 with that $20 million. I think that would be the way to go for me.
The other practical consideration, though, as much as I agree with you in theory, is that that would be a really big luxury tax bill because you're using all this space, and then you're going over it for Dudley, you're going over it for Temple,
you're going over it for Beal. Yeah, I did not do the math on that.
It gets grisly for a team that isn't great. They're good. And so I think that you're right in terms of the goal of building a good team in the near term. I have always anticipated that they would get close to filling their boat and then just use Beal. So he has about a $10 million margin. So use Beal for that. And then, you could do a little bit with Dudley and still be fine with the tax. But going over for that many guys, just going, you know, basically kind of going zero sum game on it, would lead to a bill. It would only be a 1 year thing, and, you know, I think you could justify it, but considering the year the team just had, it might be hard for Ted Leonsis to say, to give the green light for it.
Let me calculate their bill real quick.
Sure.
That actually wouldn't be too bad. If they did this plan that I'm talking about, maybe you'd pay Sessions a little bit less, or Temple a little bit less, or Dudley a little bit less. Actually, and then even when you talk about that Beal's going to be making that 22.2, they're pretty much right at the tax line, even if they use all their cap space and fill that out the way I'm talking about. So maybe they go a little bit less than that on some of these guys, or you just don't bring back Temple instead and save yourself a little bit of room there and use the room exception on somebody else. But it actually wouldn't be too bad. They would be like just a little bit over the tax line doing it that way. So I agree with that, but I think in general you could still try to follow that approach.
And if the guys are reasonable contracts, depending on which person we're talking about, some of them would have veto rights, but they could probably duck it too if they had to.
Yeah, that's another point too, that they could just try to dump someone. Although again, you run into the problem that these guys on 1 year deals would have veto power over getting traded. Anything else you want to say about these guys before we move on?
They do not have a ton of other assets. Like, I think they have a lot of guys on reasonable contracts. But one thing I wanted to discuss just really quickly is, how would you, if you were the GM of the Wizards, how would you feel about Markieff Morris right now?
I thought he was okay there. I mean, I think he's, if some awesome upgrade came along, I might take him. But I don't think there really is someone as just a pure four that is really going to be that big of an upgrade on him that's on the market right now. So, and I think he's someone who wants to start. He plays better in a starting role. So I think I feel okay about him. I was going to ask you, what about Kelly Oubre? I mean, he's someone who's an asset, could maybe be moved, but this is going to be the year, I think, where you come to the conclusion of like, all right, is this guy really going to help us or not? So you can either trade him now and actually get something for him, or it could be clear, become apparent that maybe he's just never going to get it. Hard to say that about a guy who's a one and done after 2 years, but nonetheless, that'll be the perception around the league. So that's something to consider as well. I mean, do you think he could actually help them this year?
I think he could help them as a rotation player. I still need to see more from him, particularly offensively, just to see, okay, is he like a reliable small positive? Like, if he can reach that level, I think he could be a nice piece for them, but I need to see more from him to really get there. And summer league will be very informative with a guy like him. I assume he's going to play. And just to see how he can do against players who are like about the same skill level, because hopefully they all kind of progress together. So if he can do well, you know, if he can be physically dominant and just perform at a reasonable level, then I feel pretty comfortable about it. Even though he does.
If he could use that dangling appendage on the right side of his body every once in a while as well, that might help him
a little bit.
So we didn't go through potential targets for them. The usual combo forward suspects. Barnes probably wouldn't sign there, but Marvin Williams, Luol Deng, again, you know, you'd probably have to use all of your $20 million in space under this scenario where they're keeping Dudley, or, you know, maybe even a little bit more than that if Dudley leaves. Solomon Hill, Joe Johnson, I think actually would be a good fit for them. And I, you know, I wouldn't mind paying him even like, you know, 2 years for $20 million or something, if there were some other options. Lance Thomas. Al Jefferson is a backup center I might like for a second unit that has perpetually struggled to score. I think Etuan Moore, if they don't bring back Sessions as a combo guard off the bench, he could play next to Beal, let Beal kind of run the offense, or he could play next to Wall. And then the bigs, I actually like wouldn't completely rule out a trying to get Dwight Howard, if that's kind of depending on what his price was. Ryan Anderson has been talked about for them. I don't like that much. I don't see he and Markieff Morris being able to play together. Donatus Muddy-Unis is a combo big. I would like him okay. Again, like I kind of like his versatility a little bit, even though he's not that great at either of those positions. He at least can play both of them. Lower on the market, Jason Smith or Jason Thompson. And then I thought Myers Leonard, for an offer sheet too, to kind of try to buy low a little bit, depending on what's going on with the Blazers on a center of the future. Cause Gortat now is kind of getting up there in age. He's under contract for 3 more years, but he's probably going to slip to where he's not really an adequate starting center within the next year or two.
A guy who I would love to see the Wizards go after, and I completely believe they will not, is Bismack Biyombo. I think Biyombo, to basically be their center of the future, especially if they're thinking about Markieff as the four, I think that you want a more reliable defensive center, especially as Gortat ages.
Yeah.
And
Jan Mahimi could be another one. Or, I mean, just bringing back Nene for a little bit, too.
I would consider doing both of those.
They can't do the whole bird rights
trick
on him, though, because his capital is too big. It's like 19.
Yeah, what they could do is the other trick of paying him a low salary this year with kind of a, about a future year. They could do that because they would have his full bird rights at that point.
Drew Gooden is non-guaranteed for $3.5 million. He will be dumped. Jarrell Eddie, another guy, basically at the minimum mid-July guarantee date, probably I would guess would move on. They would move on from him as well. And all right, I think that's about it on them.
Yep.
Before we move on, let me tell you about Indochino. For years, I would go into department stores looking for a suit, and it never fit me. They were too short. The arms were too short. If I got the arms long enough, it was like a tent on my torso. The pants, the arms were long enough, were like, 43 inches or something like that. I don't know if they even make that size, but it was pretty big. And so I would get it tailored and, it'd look okay, but it never really was right. And I wanted to get a custom-made suit, but I couldn't afford it. Those cost over $1,000. No longer is that the case. Indochino can give you a premium suit for just $399, up to 50% off. That's using that familiar CapSpace code. You remember that? We talk about CapSpace all the time on the program. We might have talked about it about 80 million times so far when talking about these trades. So Indochino.com/CapSpace. You send them 14 measurements, or you go into a store and they will measure it for you themselves. And 3 or 4 weeks later, you get a suit that fits you perfectly. And if it doesn't fit you perfectly, you can send it back. They'll try and fix it. If that doesn't work, you can return it with no consequences or whatever. So no reason not to try this. Get a suit that fits you perfectly. Any premium suit for just $3.99 and free shipping at Indochino.com. They got shirts too. Just ordered a couple of shirts from them that they have all sorts of patterns available. They probably have like 50 different patterns of suits that you could get. Same thing with shirts. So there's going to be something for just about anybody. You can get a vest. You can get your lapels customized. You can get a wide collar on your shirt. You can get a narrow collar. You can do literally anything you want. Monogram. It's fantastic. Great service and so much less expensive than you ever thought custom menswear could be. Indochino.com, promo code CapSpace. Indochino, your look, your way. All right, now the Denver Nuggets, a team that I will freely admit I hadn't thought that much about their offseason until recently, and I was somewhat critical of you as their GM in the mock offseason for not doing anything. And then when I started to look at them, I realized I had absolutely no idea what they should do.
The other hard part about that in terms of what we just did is that, to me, the most compelling thing that they can do are trades, whether that be sending some of their current players out, bringing other players in, or both. I actually wrote in my sporting news preview for them that why I'm so interested in the Nuggets offseason is because they're one of the only teams that could be buyers and sellers this summer.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the way I decided to finally start thinking about it, and actually we were late starting recording because I took like a half hour to just go through and try to think of like what some trades would be. I'm looking at it as what their long-term core is. So you've got Moutier, Gary Harris, kind of the young guys, Gallinari and Chandler and Farid, probably not going to be a part of the next great Nuggets team. But you look at what they have. They've got Barton, who's still under contract for 2 more years. Said Murray already, Harris, Moutier. They've got Jokic and Nurkic, will be a great center combo. Maybe if one of them emerges, likely Jokic, they might try to move Nurkic as well, but neither of those guys are probably better off, playing less than 30 minutes a game. And they'll probably bring back Darrell Arthur this offseason. That sounds like what's going to happen. But what they really don't have in the long term is someone on the wing, and specifically someone on the wing who can defend, because you think about there aren't that many good defensive power forwards to begin with. And then Jokic, while he's an offensive master and plays pretty good position defense for his age, not a guy who's going to block a ton of shots. Harris is a decent defender. Moutier will probably be decent. But you want somebody who's going to be an elite defender on the wing to, if you're going to say, all right, this core can get up to being an awesome defense.
And it would be great if that guy could defend threes and fours. And it would be even better or different if they could have a weak side guy either to block shots or just that was a good rebounder. But the problem is a lot of that also would be great if that person could stretch the floor too. And basically you're talking about young Serge Ibaka, and that's really about it.
Yeah, that's, and if they were a little bit closer to contending, I would have wanted them to get into the Ibaka sweepstakes. And they have the ammo. They have Gallo. I think they need to move him
They're not going to be able to extend him again. That was prescient to do that, but he's going to become a free agent. He's going to get paid a ton in 2017. Wilson Chandler, not quite the level of defender that we're talking about. A little bit older, probably someone who needs to be traded as well, in theory. And then they also have Farid, who, you know, is probably about an average contract. Maybe we'll see what happens this summer. He'll actually start to look a little bit better as kind of an energy big off the bench, which is kind of what he always should have been, maybe instead of a starter. So you have ammo. You've got extra picks coming as well. Barton is another guy that you could look to move. Only 2 years left on his contract, and now they basically, you know, Barton is was forced to kind of play the three more last year. He's a little bit miscast there.
And now they have a million twos.
Too short. Right, exactly, yeah. So they have a ton of twos. That's another reason he's kind of superfluous. So I would try to package together, even if you have to overpay, and maybe it's not overpaying because there aren't that many of these guys around the league, someone who is both young enough and under contract long enough that could potentially project as a really good defensive stopper on the wing. So here's my list of people that might fall into that category, and I don't know whether what the ammo they have would be enough to get someone like this. Justin Anderson would be one. I think especially if the Mavs are trying to win this year, like Gallo for Justin Anderson would actually be something that – what do you think of that from Dallas's perspective? Would you do that trade?
That's probably a better use of their cap space. And I like Justin Anderson, but I don't love him. So I think that would be reasonable for them.
Yeah, and Anderson, he's not there yet, but, you know, maybe he could be there. Jay Crowder from Boston would be another one that maybe, you know, if you threw in Chandler and Gallo.
Well,
especially
with Jaylen Brown. Like, we've talked how Jay Crowder is one of our favorite veteran contracts in the league, but there could be an issue with him and Jaylen, and if they really are sold on Jaylen Brown, Gallinari would give them another dimension, especially if they could get a defensive center. Like, you could create some beautiful five-man lineups for that Celtics team.
Yeah, Mo Harkless in restricted free agency is someone else I might think of. He showed some nice defensive versatility in the playoffs. Again, probably not a guy who's going to be a lockdown guy, but maybe the problem is you're going to have to way overpay for him. Al-Farouq Aminu in Portland, maybe you could try and trade for him also. Chris Middleton would be another guy maybe you try to throw in there, although he's on a great contract. It's got three more years left, and he's not like a great defender. And then a couple others. Justice Winslow, hard to imagine that they would have the ammo to get him, but maybe we'll see what happens this offseason. The Heat obviously are ridiculously high on Winslow, but that might be something more that could happen, you know, at like next year's trade deadline if Winslow kind of isn't really progressing that much offensively and Miami feels like Gallo and Wilson Chandler could be the missing piece, or maybe even, you know, if Bosch were to, not be able to return or something, they could trade him. Or maybe, yeah, I don't know. Let's see what happens with his salary. Robertson actually could be a guy from Oklahoma.
That's one I really like.
Because he's going to get expensive. They're going to have to extend him. And if they just played him at the four, it might look better. Danny Green, depending on what happens in San Antonio. What do you think? You think they could get Rondé from Brooklyn with any of these guys? Probably
that,
not.
Rondé's the one that, when you made the list, Rondé's the one that I was most interested in because I consider him a 3-4 defender, and I love him in an...
He guard too.
Yeah, sure, but the problem is if you have Jamal Murray and Moutier, you're not going to slide up the threes. But he also would be great in transition with them, and I think that's what the Nuggets end game is going to be, is doing that. I love Rondé for them. It's not a perfect fit, but I think he's my favorite of that group. You would have to kind of fit in with what Brooklyn wants. The other way to play this, and it's really gutsy, but the other way to do it would be to go in a little bit harder on getting draft picks in 2017 and hoping that you can find that guy yourself.
Yeah, and they've still got Juan Hernan Gomez in the fold now. They've got Beasley. Maybe he can kind of be that guy. But again, I think you need someone who can defend the threes, which is a little bit more versatile than Malik Beasley is, although he does project, I think, as a pretty decent defender. So they got to get someone like that on the team, I think, to maximize this core, unless there are going to be major trades made, because I think this core doesn't top out as, you know, above, you know, kind of an average defense, I don't think, with the guys they have in the roster right now.
Yeah, and the other thing, and I've written about this for a few teams, is that a big part of this year, and I guess you could say this offseason in terms of summer league for the Nuggets, is evaluation, because they're going to need to know what they have in all of their guys, because while I really like Emmanuel Mudiay, we will need to know a lot more before you decide, okay, he's the point guard of our future. We don't want to take somebody else at that position if we get a good option. And they're basically like that at every position on the floor. You know, they have a million twos now. Both of their centers, I think they still want more time to figure out what they are, especially Nurkic coming back from injury. I mean, Jokic had a great year. So part of it, you don't really want to sell early on those guys, so you might want to wait. But that doesn't preclude trading Gallinari, trading Wilson Chandler, doing something along those lines. And also, we haven't really talked about it, and they might need to wait a year. But if somebody comes calling about Kenneth Faried, I think you move him just because he doesn't really have a place in the next great Nuggets team.
Do they have to trade Gallo? I mean, I basically your options are you keep him around, he'd be 28, and you could just pay enough to re-sign him. And it's not like they have anything else to do with that money other than that. I mean, obviously you're going to be massively overpaying probably on a 5-year deal, but he'll probably age okay. He can shoot, move to the four a little bit more. Like, maybe it wouldn't be like the absolute worst contract.
So
you're going to have to pay him $25 million a year at least, if not more probably.
So I talked with our mutual friend Adam Modis about this on Real Jam Radio, and he talked about, he knows the situation, of course, more closely than we do, about how Gallinari doesn't like changing places. And how
he also can't stay healthy. That's the other
problem. Yeah, I wouldn't make that kind of.
And that's why I think they need to trade him now before he gets hurt again.
The Brook Lopez theory. You know, it's kind of like you want to capitalize on that. And also, to me, the Nuggets shouldn't be focused on being good this year. And I could see Gallinari just seeing the writing on the wall and being like, yeah, I'd like to stay. But he's going to get offers from good teams, too. Like, he's not going to have to do that whole, like, I'm going to get offered, like, $20 million from some garbage team and then $10 million from somebody good. He's going to get $20, $25 million from somebody who's legit.
Yeah, and someone who can shoot at his position is always going to be someone who's at a premium. And he's better defensively, actually, than a lot of people think. You know, he's no Ryan Anderson out there. All right, so we've gotten this far. They have $31 million in space. Darrell Arthur, whom they have full bird rights on, they could pay him whatever they want as long as they keep that $5.3 million cap hold on the books. I think they should do that. They should keep him around. They need his defense on the second unit. So, and you can always trade him later too. I think there's no reason not to just keep him around. So my question to you was, all right, even if you keep Arthur's hold on, you basically have a max slot in the 7 to 9 year experience, $25.7 million, and with the rookies as well. If you were just like, and they also have 16 players under contract, they'll probably dump Axel Toupin and Jakar Sampson, but you still have 14. So you really don't have any more space on this roster. Who would you just throw all of your money at if your only goal is just to get better this year?
Well, so I would consider going after one of those, like one of the guys that Houston got in our thing. So, you know, maybe Marvin Williams, you know, just go for a
Yeah, I mean, is he actually even any better than, like, I mean, he's a little bit better than, like, Wilson Chandler, but probably not. Frankly, he's older.
Yeah, and you would
Chandler,
be
we don't know if he's healthy yet. But.
I would actually probably go after, try to be the team for a restricted free agent offer, like, as crazy as it sounds. Like, I think Harrison Barnes would be really interesting with them. And then, you know, the worst case scenario is you don't get the dude. You know, you don't get the guy, and then you can do that.
Yeah, Harkless would be like a combo forward of the future would be maybe the way you'd try to go. I mean, that guy's going to be massively overpaid, but, you know, that's just how it is.
Yeah, and the other insane thing about the Nuggets is that they don't even have anybody who's going to have a rookie extension next year. Like, their guys are so young and so far away that they can spend.
And yet so good.
Yeah, that they can spend in the short term without any long-term consequences.
So the other thing I might try to do as well, if I'm just trying to get good for this year, is just upgrade a backup point guard.
Yep.
You know, just throw like $15 million for 1 year at Deron Williams, maybe even more than that. And even maybe for the year after, you know, Moutier, you know, played better down the end of the year, but we don't know for sure if he's ready to start for real. They have Jameer Nelson, but he's been hurt. He's a little bit older. That's a good contract for him, though. He's only $3 million a year for 2 more years,
yeah,
actually.
They're actually a great receptacle, like Portland was at the end of last year, for just salary dumps. You know, if it's somebody that you don't...
Yeah, the market for that is going to be so much...
Yeah, but there'll be one or two guys, probably, that the teams just frantically are trying to clear money, and almost every other team is going to be like, oh, well, we want to use our space. We're not going to...
You know what I might do, actually, if I were them? If I could just see where Quincy Pondexter was, if he just actually, as long as he just like looks like he's coming back, I might say, we will just, if you trade us Pondexter, we'll just take on Omer Asik.
That's a big commitment, but it could be.
It is, but I mean, but you think about it, and Pondexter, if he works out, you know, there's a 50% chance he's going to really be, you know, the player that he was in 2014-15 again. But, you know, then maybe you've kind of found more of that 3-and-D guy. He's still not that great of a defender, but probably better than anyone that they have at this point on the wing who actually can shoot as well. And you could always, Ashik, I mean, this isn't a team that's trying to use cap space over the next couple of years. New Orleans wouldn't trade a first-round pick, but maybe they're like, all right, you know, Quincy's not really going to work out, you know. That might be something to consider. Maybe throw in a second round or two, a good second rounder from New Orleans if they have one. Their second round situation escapes me at the moment, but
it's so interesting. I think you basically just have to throw everything on the table and just kind of see what's out there and hope that somebody else makes a mistake. But the Nuggets are in a great spot because they don't have to rush it. You know, if that opportunity presents itself, it is fantastic. But, you know, if it takes 2 years to find that guy, and that's part of the reason why, depending on what the market is, I would seriously consider trading Gallinari for one or more first round picks. Because the idea being that it might actually be possible, especially if then you can combine your ammunition. They have an extra pick from Memphis that will presumably come this year. They'll have their own pick. And so you can combine those things if there's somebody, whoever it is, that you fall in love with and say, that's our guy. Or you can have another team fall in love with your picks, and then you can trade those for some of the players we talked about before.
Yeah, I was also saying they could go after just a straight-up normal power forward of the future, but there aren't really necessarily those type of guys on the market. And, you know, the guys who are kind of shooters, it's like you might as well just leave Gallo at that position at that point.
They're a potential flyer team for Terrence Jones if he wanted to do a one-year make good just because there's a possibility. But their front court rotation is pretty stuffed already, so he wouldn't be guaranteed minutes there.
No, not at all, especially if they bring back Jarrell Arthur. All right, that's about all I've got on them. It would be a shame for them to just waste this resource of the $25 million in space that they have. But, you know, I mean, maybe the thing to do is just save a bunch of money and say, hey, when we're good again, we got to extend all these guys. You know, we'll just save the money for 5 years from now. And we have to pay the luxury tax or something when we're good. I don't know.
Oh, something else ludicrous with them. Even if Gallinari opted in, which he won't, it's a $16 million player option, they would still have $38 million in cap space next summer. Like,
would have 30 even with his cap.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane.
I will be back with the Memphis Grizzlies after this brief word. Okay, so for Memphis, let's just go on the scenario first that they keep Mike Conley. His cap hold is only $14.4 million. As long as they keep that on the books, they can pay them up to his starting maximum of $26.6 million. We imagine that they will offer him the full 5-year max, whatever he wants, to just try and keep him. Part of the, you know, you might question whether that's a good contract or not, but, you know, you see the other bad contracts are going to be handed out. Yeah, it's going to be bad for the last couple of years, but he'll probably at least still be okay those 2 years. And the question, of course, is what else are you going to do? Especially because, and this is something to keep in mind from them, they have this draft pick situation of the two picks that they've traded that have, shall we say, slightly inadequate protection? Can we say that?
I think you can say it's more than inadequate protection, considering it's only top five. And just a team with Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph is probably going to be good enough to make that irrelevant as long as they stay healthy. And if they bring back Mike Conley, then it's almost out of the question. I mean, you're not going to, because a top five protection to me, you have to feel comfortable about it, you have to have one of the bottom three records, because you can get jumped pretty easily if you're fourth. And
Yeah. And so that's owed to Denver, the one we just talked about. And then 2019, they owe a first to Boston from the Jeff Green trade. That is top eight protected that year, top six protected the next year, and unprotected in 2021. So even if they wanted to tank, I mean, there's basically no way. I don't care who you have on your roster, unless you're like, you know, last year's Philly, which they'll never get to, or 2 years ago Philly, where you're going to be like, all right, we are feeling great about, like, not losing this 1-5 protected pick, as you alluded to.
Yeah, that's a big issue. And also, another related thing with Memphis is just they don't have a lot of youth on this team. And they have part, so you would think, oh, well, they can infuse that with draft picks, except that they're without probably two of their draft picks in the next 3 years.
Yeah, and then, you know, Jordan Adams, it looks like his career could be in jeopardy after he's having this cartilage replacement surgery. We've talked a little bit about how that was, at a minimum, an oddly managed injury. Jarrell Martin has yet another foot injury as well. He could, maybe that's a chronic problem for him. It's going to be hard to count on him, although he showed a few flashes in the dog days once everyone on their team got injured. This is definitely a team you have to wonder a little bit about kind of where they are.
are at from a medical standpoint. But you know, that's too much to get into here. What do they need, assuming that they bring back Conley? They would have $26 million probably in space. Is that right? Let me see.
Yeah, so if they bring back Conley, they would have 19.2 if they kept the hold for Matt Barnes, and about 26 even if they kept Vince Carter, who has a partially guaranteed deal.
Right, right. So, and they could always just cut him. It's $2 million and stretch him to get that down to, you know, a third of that if they really needed it, the space. And I think the number one option for me, I thought actually Dan did a great job with them in the mock off season going after two guards who can shoot. And they are lucky in the sense that while they are going to have to pay a ton, those type of players are available on the market.
They are. And I would say that their combined needs at the two and the three also open things up a little bit, because they don't have to be picky about fit. This isn't a circumstance where you're like, oh, well, we have this three guard who's good, but he can't do X, and so we need to make sure that that person can do that. So they can be a little bit different. He went after JR, which I thought was interesting. A guy that I would consider for them also is Evan Fournier, because he's more of a secondary ball handler than a primary. And while the defensive fit next to Conley isn't perfect, I think that he would do well there.
Yeah, and they still would have Tony Allen on the team. I think he could be useful. They obviously would have to max him out, I think. I mean, JR, like, I would start make an offer for him at 2 years, $40 million for this team.
Yeah, there isn't really much of a downside for them in terms of the second year, because they're, you know, they'll have money. They actually only have $35 million right now committed to 2017. Though of course, if they bring back Conley, that number almost doubles. But they, you know, so they can go into that space if they want to. So if it was a 2 year deal, that wouldn't really bring much downside.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't see that they're gonna do better than JR for $20 million. I mean, he's 30, but he'll age well. He can shoot the ball. He'd be the best shooter they had, and having like a volume shooter like him would be good too. Eric Gordon could be another direction they'd go in as just a pure shooter at the two, bringing back Courtney Lee, but I think they need a better offensive player than that necessarily as well. Anyone else who you think would be, I mean, obviously anyone at the 3-2 who can shoot the ball, combo forward type, just even a straight three who could shoot would be someone else. Ellen Crabb in restricted free agency. Like this actually would be a good team to make like a monster offer to Crabb or Fournier if, you know, they kind of strike out. Etuan Moore would be another guy they could look at too, and then kind of use him as a backup point guard at times, but also play him off the ball with Conley.
Yeah, it's kind of a fascinating situation with them, because they could, you know, I like them going after the young guys. Harkless, if they don't really feel sold on their four position, he would be compelling for them.
Yeah, they need a four of the future. I mean, Zach Randolph is probably getting to the point where he probably shouldn't be starting anymore, and certainly not at the four if you're in a, you know, he's going to be a defensive liability much more in this new age. And he's getting to the point now where it used to be he would actually be able to punish that strategy more. But now he's not quite as good at posting up, and so, you know, he's not going to be able to kill you more than you can kill him by him not being able to guard anyone at the three-point line.
I would also, so a guy that I really like and haven't mentioned for enough teams is Troy Daniels. I think Daniels, he's a great shooter. That's really what he does.
Yeah, you know what I wonder about him, though? I feel that, like, he looks good on paper, he shoots the ball great, but he never plays for these teams that theoretically could use him, you know?
Yeah, but
like, you wonder why that is.
Look at Clifford's rotations last year. I mean, Clifford didn't play Jeremy Lamb either, so I'm not sure that I'm
going to... Yeah, but, like, he didn't play for Houston either, and you know, you just... Whenever a guy like that, who seems good, can't get on the floor in multiple destinations for, you know, 3 years now that he's been in the league, and he's in his mid-20s, you really wonder, like, you know, Anthony Morrow is another
guy. I was going to call it the Anthony Morrow principle. I mean, if a guy just doesn't play when it seems like he should, then maybe there's something.
Like, I mean, these coaches are not morons, and you could say one coach is a moron, but when you get to two or three coaches, then you probably, there's probably something wrong with the guy.
Yeah, and I think that Memphis, if they wanted to, like, it's a weird year because there really aren't that many just like project twos and threes that you could really go after. But I feel like they're a logical destination for that. I mean, while they it's funny that in some ways PJ Harrison would be a nice fit for that, but they actually can't sign him for much money.
Yeah, they can't. He's only able to go up to 1.3 because he had his rookie option declined by Charlotte before he was traded.
Speaking of that, Solomon Hill, power forward of the future.
Yeah, this actually would be a pretty good solo destination as well. But I mean, my approach with them, and I feel this more strongly now after doing the mock off season, is just throw $20 million at the guy you want. And these guys even can do it for, you know, 2 years, maybe even three. Just get one guy who's going to be good, who can help you. Because if you're going to try to get two guys at $10 million, that's just like not going to move the needle, especially for a team like this that actually wants to like be at least in the lower end of the Western Conference playoff picture.
One thing I think it is a big picture conversation that I wrote about for the Sporting News a long time ago is if I were Memphis, and I understand why they see this differently than me, I wouldn't feel comfortable giving Conley 5 years. And the reason for that is that he's a smaller guard. He's going to be deep into his 30s by that point. And I think that sentiment is a really good motivator right now, but I think sentiment doesn't feel nearly as good if you're not a playoff team in, like, let's say 3 years from now, and you still have to pay both Gasol and Conley for a few years.
Well, that's a good transition, because my question whenever anyone says that, and I agree with you, that contract's going to suck for years 4 and 5. What's your plan if Conley leaves, especially considering that tanking isn't really an option either? I mean, like, what else are you doing during this time besides just trying to be as good as you can?
Yeah, it is a real sacrifice for Memphis, because it's not like, let's say, the Lakers or the Knicks, where you're like, oh, we can use our cap space to get X guy or whatever like that. I mean, it's not realistic to say that. I guess the counter that I would have, you know, you're spending it, you're trying to make value plays, you know, you're trying to be maybe the next kind of Denver-y team in that way of just, they didn't, I mean, they got bad enough, yeah, they were doing
it. It's just the wrong year to do that, though, in free agency. I mean,
in free agency this year, and then you go after it hard next year in case some teams spend like idiots this summer. But for me,
yeah, I think it could be even worse next year, frankly.
Depending.
It could be. Yeah, we'll
but I think that,
especially if a lot of teams go for the overpay guys for 1 year, or guys can get 1+1s too at a very overpaid rate and then get back onto the market last year, I think we'll see a lot of that too.
Let me just, before I go into my thing, 1+1s too is hilarious. But I think that the reason that I think Memphis is different than most people is just that I'm not sold on them being really good, like being even, let's say, a playoff team a couple of years from now if they have this kind of money tied up. And I think that's...
Oh, no, they're going to be bad. Like, that's just what's going to happen.
Because if you are a, let's say you're like the sixth seed with those guys, that's fine. I have no opposition to that. This team was the best, you know, it's the best run they've ever had in franchise history. You know, even if the best they ever do is make a conference finals, that's something. But having that when you're not making the playoffs, and if they don't go to a top 16 format, making the West in 2-3 years, I think is going to be insane. Because, you know, some of these teams will turn it around. Like, I just, personally, I couldn't justify signing off on that. But I understand that I am the anomaly there. It's just, if it's 3 years of that, that's awfully tough to take.
Yeah, I mean, like, I realize that, but your plan, your alternative plan is like you didn't even articulate one.
Yeah,
you know?
it's bottoming out. But again, the bottoming out with them isn't the same unless you can somehow like guarantee that you're going to keep your pick this coming year. So yeah, I understand the flaws in that plan. Obviously.
Yeah. So this would be my approach if they were to lose Conley. I would make him that max offer. Like that's the only offer that you can make him and expect to keep him. If he leaves, they're done. They have one above average player on the roster. That's Gasol, coming off a broken foot. He hasn't even been cleared yet. He's not going to play in the Olympics for Spain. He's going to be playing 28 minutes a game, probably, coming off of that broken foot. They'll have $43 million in space. No way to get a decent point guard. No way to get anybody who can do anything off the dribble. You know, maybe they bring back Lance Stevenson or something, whose option they declined. We know that their tanking would be difficult. To me, what you do is you keep Gasol around Randolph as well. Keep those guys, you know, try to, don't like tie up long-term money, but do whatever you can stopgap wise. And then when it's clear to everyone, including your fans, that you're not good anymore, you just move those guys, including Gasol, at the trade deadline. And also after Gasol has proven that he's healthy again, the hope is. And then you just give up that pick to Denver. You've gotten what you can out of the guys who are on the roster, and then you just super tank in the 2017-18 season when you know you have your pick, and then, you know, kind of just see where you're at after that for 2019 and beyond. You just maintain flexibility, just pull a Philly for a year, but you just keep those guys around and move them at the trade deadline. That's when they're going to have the most value, Randolph and Gasol, and then maybe even anyone else that you could sign this year to a
a like semi-value contract that you could offload.
Yeah, it would be kind of a parallel to what I did with the Lakers in the mock-off season of just kind of also taking what I would do with the free agent space is just take flyers on dudes and hope that either that it works out and you do something or that, that you can trade them as well.
Yeah, but it is not looking good for this franchise in the aggregate. I think even if they re-sign Conley, that they could look pretty bad. I think that there's a pretty decent argument that that pick that they owe to Boston is, you know, once that Lakers obligation to Philly gets fulfilled, that's probably the most valuable outstanding pick in the league, given the light protection.
With one exception.
What is that? What am I forgetting?
The Kings' obligation to the Sixers.
Oh, the unprotected 2019.
Because that's unprotected.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see what happens this year and after Cousins could leave. Well, Georgios Papagiannis will be coming into his own that year.
Yeah, I honestly think at some point.
Not to make fun of him too bad.
No. I think he could be good too. I think that would be a fun. I think I mentioned this before that going through those obligations. But Memphis's flew under the radar for a really long time, and they did pick up that pick from the Clippers in the Lance Stephenson trade, or in the Lance Stephenson, Jeff Green trade. And I'm not critical of what they did because they ended up getting 2 seconds out of it and both those guys could be interesting for them. But it is a tough place to be.
All right. Anything else to say on these guys?
It's tough. Like they are maybe in the most underappreciated no win situation. Like Brooklyn, everybody knows is tough.
Yeah, well, making the playoffs and being the seventh seed or something—that's
okay. If they stay healthy.
Yeah. If they do, I mean, they could easily miss the playoffs, even if they can bring Conley and Gasol back and find a decent two in free agency. So before we move on, a word from our friends at Betterment. It's never too late to save for retirement or other financial goals, and Betterment is the largest independent automated investing service out there. They have this awesome product called Smart Deposit, because idle cash kind of loses value, and putting your cash in your savings account isn't a great return, so you can put it into a lower risk investing account, and the way that it works for them is you can set a threshold for how much money you need in your account as kind of a backstop, and then anything over that amount, they can take it out for you and invest it. And that's something that could work really well for people who are freelancers or have incomes that come in kind of unsteadily, to where if you have the money, it'll just invest it for you automatically. That's just only one of the products that they offer. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. And of course, you can get started with them using the special URL for Dunked On listeners, betterment.com/capspace. We talk about cap space all the time on the program, so it's easy to remember. That's how they know that you came from us and allows them to continue advertising on the show because they know their advertising is working. Automated investing has a lower cost than more traditional financial services, and they have some very unique products that can help you with your investing. Betterment, investing made better. Betterment.com/capspace is the URL. The Sacramento Kings, after a very solid trade to offload Marco Bellinelli and pick up Malachi Richardson, the number 22 pick, are now looking at about $32 million in space without Rajon Rondo. And since they very likely will have to use cap space to re-sign him, that's what we should be thinking about. And other than potentially bringing over Bogdan Bogdanovich, there are not really much in the way of things that are going to change that. They don't have, other than Rondo, not really any outgoing free agents that they want to sign. I guess, no, that's not true, actually, because Seth Curry, they got to use bird rights to re-sign, to match any contract on him unless they stay over the cap, which they are not going to do. I'm sorry, they have to use cap space.
Well, yeah, that's why Sacramento's situation is interesting in that way, because they basically have $32 million to use, and that's really all they have, because they have some minimum guys they can dance around, but the two free agents they have that are most notable are both going to be signed or re-signed with cap space. So you can think about that as a $32 million or lump sum, if you will, and they can divvy it up however they want. And presumably they should be divvying most of that up on guards because they have enough centers to last for a couple lifetimes.
How much would a restricted offer sheet to Seth Curry have to be? He's not arenas limited. He's got 3 years of experience. How much would that have to be for you to not match?
I'd say if it reached about, you know, like $20 million, however many years that takes, unless it's four, that would probably be a little bit much. Like two for 20 or 3 for 20 is probably a lot for a guy who's very unlikely to ever be more than a second point guard.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess you just look at, because let's remember the mindset here. They're trying to be good this year, although I did applaud them for their long-term view in the draft, but I think that they, and I guess we'll wonder whether Bogdanovich is going to come over or not as a guy who can be in the mix of the two. No, I don't think he will. It was reported that he wasn't. Maybe the trade will change something, but considering the Kings can't offer him any more money than the Suns are going to, he's on the rookie scale either way, and he was the number 27 pick, so they can't really pay him much more than $1 million to start, that it seems unlikely that the math works any better for him. Even though he is obviously Serbian, and so is Vlade, maybe that helps a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. It's a tough call with Curry. I mean, you do need a backup point guard. Do you feel like he could be an average backup point guard? I mean, we're probably overrating him at this point. Well, but at 25, he can shoot it. Like, his skill set, you don't get backup point guards who can shoot the way he can.
So you talk about how they need a backup point guard. I think they need a starting point guard if they're going to be good. Like, Darren Collison is, I think he's more of a high-end backup than a low-end starter, though those two things are really close. I think that he is more that range. The problem is that the point guard market is so thin that you're probably going to be getting somebody at Collison's level or below. So yeah. I would, if it were me, think seriously about the idea of kind of more punting at point guard, just because the long-term money
there.
I
totally agree with you on that.
Is
maybe re-sign, match on Curry, unless it's just completely astronomical, and just roll with those two guys, bring in, a third point guard or at the minimum, and get someone who can play some defense on the wings.
Yeah, and then throw that $32 million at guys that have potential, because the Kings have Boogie, of course, and if they're going to, theoretically, if they're going to trade him, then they'll be getting a lot of different assets. So what I think you want to do is you want to have as many worthwhile pieces, and so I would, most likely, since Sacramento's going to have to overpay for everybody, I would be looking more to try to consolidate if you can, but that might be hard.
So for Curry, this is actually interesting. They have a lot of incentive, if they really want to keep him around, to reach a deal with him on their own before he gets into restricted free agency, because your problem is that that offer doesn't get signed until the 7th, right? So you could leave some space open for him, but you almost have to guess at how much that's going to be. Otherwise, you can get in a situation where the other team will know how much they have to pay to fix it so that you can't match anymore, right? If you've already used up your space, let's say we're like, okay, we'll leave $7 million open for him, then another team, all they got to do is offer him $9 million, and now you can't match it unless you just dump some salary in the interim, which you're allowed to do. But so that's a little bit vexing. They do have a pretty good incentive to agree with him. And while Collison and Curry is not, exactly at the top of the heap as far as point guards, I don't think that Jeremy Lin, he went for 4 years, $60 million to them in the offseason. No, I'm sorry, 4 years, $64 million to them in the mock-off season. I don't think he's enough of an upgrade over Collison that, I'm willing to pay that much for him.
And it's not like he's going to be getting better with time. He's not going to age with this group.
Right.
He's going to be more on the downside. He's more a guy that you want to be getting that value early rather than getting it late. So I agree with you. And while there are other teams that could consider it, and if they're willing to offer it, that's the offer sheet I would take. Sacramento is one of the clearest cut places that should offer Evan Fournier a lot of money.
Yeah, that's one that's pretty good. I mean, for me, for Curry, I might say, okay, I'll offer you, maybe even overpay a little bit. I would say I'll start with 2 years, $10 million, and if he takes it, be happy. And if
2 years, $10 million per, or $10 million total?
No. I'm sorry. 2 years, $10 million total, $5 million. And then kind of see where it goes from there. He's age 25, so you get two of his prime years. We'll see. We're probably spending too much time on South Korea, but they are going to need a backup point guard, and I don't think there's really a great starter out there for them who's that much better than Seth. So you take advantage of the fact that he is restricted, he is your own guy, and hopefully get him at a discount compared to some of the other guys that you would have to get just on the open market. So, yeah, you said Evan Fournier is one, but again, this is one of those teams that has a problem where unless you are just willing to overpay one of these restricted free agents so much, you would have to take Alan Crabb and say, we're going to offer you
I mean, what would be so much for Allen Crabbe that it would just, like, there's no way they would ever match, like, $18 million a year or something?
I was going to say 15 or 16, but 18 would certainly do the trick.
And Crabbe could help them a little bit, but I'm more partial to somebody on this team who can play some defense.
That would be nice.
That's the number one thing that they need. Who falls into that vein for you among some of the people that they would potentially be looking at here?
Yeah, because the problem is Harrison Barnes in some ways makes sense for them, but I don't see any chance that he's the best offer sheet that they can, that they're the best offer sheet.
You have to think he's probably going to have multiple max offers. People who I would like for them, I think Gerald Henderson could be good. This would be another Etuan Moore destination as well, potentially.
Lance Thomas is a guy I like there.
Yeah, you know, and they do have kind of two combo forwards on the roster already, but having another one wouldn't hurt. And they also have all these centers that they're probably going to play Cousins at the four a lot, which I think is dumb, but, you know, they have all these centers and they got to play, I suppose. So, I would be looking for more of a pure wing, but then there's also the chance that Rudy Gay could get traded too, because he's going to be a free agent. And you think, I think you're going to try to compete as much as you can this year, but if things inevitably go south, and of course they want to keep that top 10 protected pick that they owe to the Bulls again,
especially because now it doesn't affect any other obligation,
right, dumping Rudy Gay at the trade deadline because he's in the last year of his contract, he's got a player option for $14 million that he'll probably opt out of at age 31 next summer. So I think having another combo, but I think really anybody at the 2 through 4 positions who could defend, that's who I'm just throwing my money at. And, you know, whether it's Henderson, you know, I could see them going like 2 years, $15 million a year for Gerald Henderson. I think that actually wouldn't be a terrible deal for them.
What I find interesting about, I think that that is a priority, but for me, if you can get it, and of course that's really hard to do, I would want somebody who's more of a secondary creator, because those are really hard to get, and like that's something available.
Anybody who can play some defense and is a secondary creator is getting maxed out in this market.
Yeah, well, I'm saying even if they can't play defense, you know, like just a guy who can do that, because you can find defenders more often, but if you can consolidate your, that's why I like Evan Fournier there, is yeah he's not perfect, he has some serious flaws, but you can then, once you resolve your point guard situation, he will look a lot better. And especially if you're thinking about a post Cousins Kings, I always feel like you want to have two guys at bare minimum, you want to have two guys in your starting lineup that can initiate pick and rolls. I think that's kind of the next level with this. And
Ben McLemore, unfortunately, is not that guy. You know, we were thinking
Ben
about
McLemore him. Can't initiate a dribble drive to the hole.
Yeah, no, he can't even do a straight line drive. And while he had some okay moments at times, he basically just shoots threes and that's it. He's got some decent tools on defense, but he hasn't put it together yet there. It's going to be 23. He's going to extension eligible already. This is already his fourth year.
And he has $10 million cap hold.
Yeah, and he also had an 8.4 PR. So, I mean, I think you would be foolish to assume that he is, like, going to be your two guard of the future at this point.
I can't remember if it was when I wrote for Vegan Fish Tacos or Real GM, but I demolished Ben McLemore when he was a prospect, because I believe that if you are a two guard, unless you are amazing at other things, you have to be able to dribble. And when I watched him at Kansas, I'm like, I don't know how this guy's going to create offense. And, you know, you never want to be right when you're negative about somebody, but those worst fears have been realized with him.
Yeah, if you can't dribble, you got at the two, you got to be like a Danny Green level, a shooter and defender, to really be like a good player.
Yeah, look at Tony Allen, who was a scorer in college, but his limitations, even just shooting the ball, like if teams know how to exploit you and you can't beat that, then you become a huge negative, and there aren't that many secondary or even competent ball handlers at the other positions to justify it, and his defense isn't there.
Dude, if I were this team, the more I think about it, and I know you don't like Etuan Moore as much as I do, I would throw like 2 years, $24 million at Etuan Moore. With this roster, I mean, who else are you going to get? He can defend. If you then kind of things aren't working out at point guard, maybe you could play a little point guard. You could guard the other team's point guard too, if necessary. So I think he would be a guy I would really, and he can shoot reasonably well. Got an okay floater game, like not, you know, a dynamic penetrator, but he can at least do something. He's someone I would look at very seriously.
One thing that I disagree with a fair amount of people on Sacramento, so I already said the thing about how they shouldn't spend on point guards. I also would not spend a lot on what I would call low upside too. So like Deion Waiters is a solid enough player, but I wouldn't give him long-term money just because that's something that could tie up your books and he's not going to get a lot better than he is right now. So yeah. I wouldn't go in that direction. However, Sacramento could be a really nice, make good opportunity for, let's say, like OJ Mayo, if he really strikes out on the market. Just give him 1 year. He's going to get a ton of touches and just do that. And you're probably going to suck anyway. So just get a guy, who can kind of push you up a little bit enough to make it interesting in the new arena. And that's the other huge factor in
Sacramento. So I got another two before we transition to that. This could be like a huge Kent Bazemore offer destination.
Sure. I mean,
this could be the 4 year, you know, $18 million a year Kent Bazemore destination.
Yeah. I mean, I like Bazemore better defending ones and twos and playing next to somebody who can handle the ball, which is what you don't have in Sacramento. But he's a nice piece when you're looking to, when you know you're going to have to add something else.
Eric Gordon, another guy who could be in the mix there as well, although, again, not a guy who defends quite as well. Evan Turner, actually, might not be a terrible fit here either. I could see them maybe...
He'd be a nice second unit guy for them, especially...
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing Caspi at the four, you know, his lack of shooting doesn't hurt you that badly. You can even play him with McLemore, who you at least have to guard at the three-point line, play Evan Turner at the three, and that's kind of... your second creator,
he's your second creator. I mean, both, if they're going to go Collison Curry, then both those guys can dance between primary and secondary. So you could play them with Turner, and they can both be, they're both capable off ball guys.
If they do trade Rudy Gay, like, what do you think they could get for him? Do you think you could get a first round pick for him at the trade deadline?
I don't think you could right now, but if a team
that's probably because the trade deadline is 6 months away.
Well, you know, but what I'm saying is, like, there isn't that market there. But what will change between now and then is a team will have a need.
Yeah.
And so if they get kind of the Wizards with Emeka Okafor situation, where, you know, they think they're going to be good and they have a player and that player gets hurt, because Gay is not a long-term commitment. We expect that he's going to opt out. At that point, you know, you might as well just say screw it and do it. And so it's hard to know who that team is, but that is certainly possible. And Sacramento needs all the long-term assets they can get.
In 2017 for them, they could also, again, have just a ton of space. $65 million, and that even would include Omri Caspi's cap hole. They would have full bird rights on him. They could bring him back. They also have Ben McLemore with a $10 million hold that would cut into that. I see very little chance that he gets extended unless he's willing to sign, you know, the Jeremy Lamb 3-for-21 type of special, which I don't see happening.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. But Sacramento isn't their cap space is more usable at this point as a vessel for other team stuff, which is amazing because they didn't really do that much last year. And of course, they deserve credit for making a mistake on Marco Bellinelli and then being able to somehow get a first round pick for him. Though I think most of that blame should just go to Charlotte. Sacramento does get credit for making the trade.
Yeah, I didn't think that Bellinelli contract was that bad at the time.
No, at the time it was fine. Yeah. At the time it was fine. It just turned into a disaster.
Yeah, but he had a really bad year. Can you imagine if they just matched on Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah.
They
facilitated that getting nothing in return. Do you remember that?
They did.
Yeah, they got no assets back. They gave Phoenix one of the best contracts in the league that I believe it was that season. It was that season.
All right, before we start getting depressed, let's move on to Orlando.
Oh, different kind of depressed.
Yeah, that's true, right? I mean, would you rather be in Orlando's position right now or Sacramento?
Orlando.
I mean, Sacramento at least has Cousins, right?
Orlando has been a more reliable free agent destination over the years. At least they've gotten interest in that way. And Orlando has a lot more young talent. I mean, whether we're sold on them or not, Hazonia.
Yeah, but the Kings
Gordon,
could get just as much young talent as they have if they just traded Cousins, I feel like.
Probably. Yeah, that's definitely true. But Cousins is more of a ticking time bomb, because that's a negative thing. It's that he's a depreciating asset. Let's put it
that way. Yeah, by the way, I wanted to break in. I forgot. You used the term before in a post-Cousins world, like sort of it's this like post-apocalyptic, like dystopian movie about the Kings, which in fact, that's what it is. It kind of might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think about there's a reason why I spent July and August of last year tracking down all the information on that pick that is owed from Sacramento to Philadelphia. And the reason for it is that when I look into the future, I see the 2018-19 Kings as just being this, just whatever the opposite of the shining city on the hill is. Like, I think that's a possibility. I hope for much better for them. I always do. But when you look at what happened last offseason and just the way that all of this has gone, even if they even if they nail a lot of stuff, it's just going to be hard for them to even be decent if Cousins leaves.
Yeah, you and pick protection and my cat and tuna fish are probably like the two organisms that are like most interested in particular topics of like anything that I know. Like you like the appetite that you have for pick protection is really just a marvelous thing.
It's my thing. But so let's move on to Orlando, a team that also has a weird pick protection issue, which we don't need to focus on because it's more a Lakers thing.
Sorry, but I'm getting a little punchy after like, you know, our seventh hour of podcasting over the last couple of days.
Hey, I embrace my pick protection nerdery. It's something I care about. And so, but it's okay. Orlando made the shocking draft day trade. I would argue in some ways it's more shocking from their end than Oklahoma City's. And so now they added Serge Ibaka. And the way their cap situation is that they have three notable restricted free agents, Evan Fournier, Andrew Nicholson, and Dwayne Dedman. Assuming Fournier's cheap cap hold is going to stay on the books as his $5.7 million, really they either have $38.8 million with all three of them or $44.2 if they let Nicholson go. So that is a lot of money.
Nicholson, I feel like, actually could help them still. Although, you know, he was obviously part of the like Scott Skiles rotation roulette. But I think with Ibaka and Vucevic in the fold, having a guy who could come off the bench and shoot and play and just use Ibaka as your backup center and have that be kind of the three-man front court rotation. And then because I'm giving up hope that they're just going to start Aaron Gordon at the four. That's obviously not going to happen. And this team is going to be very, very shooting challenged, especially, I mean, having Aaron Gordon playing at the three and then starting Elfrid Payton and then two traditional bigs. I mean, I realize Ibaka can shoot, but Ibaka's dreams of doing something offensively other than standing at the three-point line, if they start Aaron Gordon and Elfrid Payton with him, that's all he's going to be doing. But anyway, that's probably getting too much into what this roster is going to look like. But I think they need an upgrade at point guard, and that's not really available here. I mean, if they had like a real point guard of the future on this team who theoretically could shoot the ball a little bit, I would actually feel like pretty decent about their future, but I just am not at all a Payton believer.
Neither am I. I never have been. And Payton, you know, he again, it's kind of a parallel for me with Michael Carter-Williams, where I really like them if they eventually become like a second unit guy. You know, I think he can do something there, but relying on him and, you know, thinking about him as a starter long term it's dangerous. He could get there, but I want to be proven wrong. Rather, you know, that would be the assumption I would use. But the problem with that is, even if Orlando agreed with us, this is still not the time to get that player, because we just talked about it with Sacramento. The point guard market is really shallow, and I mean, like, and they're not good enough where getting, let's say, Mike Conley, like, would be a huge thing, because you're getting more. While you don't have to pay the fifth year for him, you are getting more of the downside, because the upside years, you're just, I mean, maybe you're a playoff team, but you're not going to be like winning playoff series probably this year if all you do is add Mike Conley.
Yeah, I think they are out of the mix completely for anybody who's going to have the option of multiple max offers in a traditional sense. Conley, maybe even probably Chandler Parsons, frankly, although maybe he would just want to go back to Orlando just for lifestyle reasons or whatever. But in terms of like how competitive the team can be, I don't think that like it's hard to imagine that. And they could get to two max slots, but they would probably have to either move on from Fournier or dump some of their other guys as well, or Vucevic maybe. He's another. I mean, just these pieces just don't fit together. It's so hard to think of, like, you know, if they just had Aaron Gordon at the four and Ibaka at the five in the East, which I don't, where you're not really, like, that's overstated because you still got to play the West plenty of games too, but you're not going to run into some massive center that you're going to have a huge problem with. And then you actually would have like a nice speed advantage, a shooting advantage. It would all kind of fall into place. But it seems like, you know, they're just going to start Vucevic, and that messes everything up, having both Gordon at the three, Payton at the one, and then I guess you've got Hazonia and Fournier at the two, assuming they match on him. Yeah, I don't know. So what is your plan for them as far as like who they should go after in terms of outside free agents with this ridiculous amount of space that they have?
So I think the biggest thing they need after trading Victor Oladipo, beyond, if we're taking point guard off the table, which we are, is defense on the perimeter, because Oladipo was their best defender there. Hazonia, you know, he could eventually be decent. Fournier is not good. So you could go after defenders a lot of different flavors. Kent Bazemore would be interesting. Lance Thomas would be interesting. Jared Dudley on a short-term deal would be potentially worthwhile. So that would be, that would solve a big need. And I know that they're probably hoping Aaron Gordon can do that. And sure, if he can become a guy who can defend threes, that would be fantastic. But even then, you would still want somebody who can defend ones and twos.
Yeah, and you'd like to see Gordon playing next to a combo forward who can shoot it, because then Gordon could either guard the other team's four or three or even two, whoever like the best threat kind of is on the other team. But, you know, I'm not sure that that's necessarily realistic either. They definitely need a solution at backup point guard, because CJ Watson, while he's okay, is just so injury prone. I think he's like 31 now too. I mean, bringing back Jennings wouldn't be the end of the world. They do have bird rights on him. His cap hold is $12 million. That might be, you know, even spending like 2 years, $24 million on him might be okay, but that's still, for a guy coming off an Achilles, maybe more than you want. He's not going to make a difference for you. Is there anyone else that you like for them on the point guard market? Maybe like Seth Curry could be another guy, just because they just have to get more shooting on this team.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. They would also be a compelling potential signing Arenas thing for maybe like a Tyler Johnson type guy, just on the logic of maybe he'll become somebody who can be useful for whatever pieces we add around them. I kind of like Tyler for them, and of course it'd also be partially sticking it to Miami, which I'm sure.
What about Deron Williams for these guys?
If he wanted a clear cut starting role and they were willing to give it to him, I think that would be a reasonable fit.
It's 32. I mean, maybe he could just start, and then, you know, he can at least shoot the ball a little bit. Got some size, so you could probably switch more defensively. But you know, only play him 25 minutes a game, still get plenty of minutes for Peyton as well, and then get into the point guard market in 2017 if it looks like Peyton is just not going to be the answer as your long-term starting point guard. I could see them. I mean, because to me, where their holes are, they need another big, obviously. Ryan Anderson actually could be okay for them too, as kind of off the bench, again, play the four next to either Ibaka or Vucevic, but that again assumes that they're not going to wise up and just play Gordon at the four.
Yeah, and Nicholson would be there. And something else tying in with what your lament earlier is that one of the needs for them is a real, what I call a second unit engine. So it's just somebody who can generate offense, even if they are bad at everything else. Like Evan Turner is a great example of how this can work, because CJ Watson is a solid player when he's on the floor. But if you're not going to have somebody, you know, at his level or better, that's going to be a problem. And what's so frustrating about that is Nick Vucevic would be perfect for that. You run a lot of things through him. You do that, you make him the second unit monster. We've talked about using back to the basket guys in that role. Vucevic is actually good at spreading the floor as well. I like his mid-range shot. He would be a really nice fit to just kind of be the pick and roll hub for a lot of that kind of stuff. And so that would actually tie in really well with the idea that we both support, that Ibaka and Gordon start at the four and the five, you know, and then you still play him a little bit there. But if they're going to spend money, long-term money, on that kind of a niche, it gets a little dangerous, because the guys that are on the market that do that generally don't age really well. And, you know, they often can't fill a bigger role. Like, you can think about Jamal Crawford. Like, Jamal Crawford is very good at what he does, but you wouldn't really want to, he can't scale up. He just has to, you know, if the guy in front of him gets hurt, he just stays in the same spot.
Yeah, I do think that if I were just trying to improve as much as I could this year, it seems like it's kind of the plan here now, that throwing big money at Deron Williams might be the way that I would do that. Some other point guard who can shoot the ball on the lower end of the market, just as a third point guard. I wouldn't mind seeing them take a flyer on Marcelino Huertas, because his athletic limitations, if he's playing with Gordon and Ibaka, Hezonja too, who we haven't even talked about yet, could be better. And the man can at least just run a pick and roll, create something for you on the second unit, and you just hope he can hold up okay athletically. Grievous Vasquez is a larger kind of version of that as well, just a guy who can run a pick and roll pass, like just do something for you off the dribble on your second unit would be another guy I would look at. I don't want like a total just caretaker type as this point guard that they're going to bring in. I need somebody who can actually like run a pick and roll for you.
Yeah, and you poo-pooed it a little bit, but we have to see what the market is. I think Chandler Parsons would be worthwhile for them on only a four-year contract. You take a lot of the less risk. You probably want a 3+1 anyway. And you can get a guy who can be that secondary creator. He's probably not going to be as valuable on the 2016-17 team, but he could be a nice piece to just have in place for 17-18. And we don't know what position Hezonja is going to defend eventually. Like, I've always thought of him as more of a 3 than a 2, just because I think his quickness advantage at the 3 is a little bit better than his size advantage against 2s. But if you get Parsons, you can play them together, you can play them separately, and the risk is not as severe. Also, because he's still on the 0-6 experience range, so you're not paying him even as much as Conley's getting.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that they shouldn't make that offer to him. They obviously should. I just don't think he's going to go there.
Yeah, that could be true.
This isn't that good of a team. I will tell you this. I think just about anybody they sign this offseason is going to have a worse contract than Tobias Harris will.
God.
The guy that they traded away to open up this space.
And also, something to consider, I guess you consider it with Orlando, is that they have a ton of space in 2017 as well, because basically all the cheap guys on this team are still going to stay cheap. They don't even have any rookie extension guys this year. And in 2018, the only guys who are going to get pay raises, I think it's Aaron Gordon was in that class, and I think Alfred Payton was in that class. So, like, you know, depending on how much of a raise those guys get, so they could, you know, they could theoretically spend, and that $60 million I think I said they have $60 million potentially in 2017. That includes Ibaka's $16 million cap hold, and that ties in with something that is a possibility, especially considering how we said their space isn't going to be that valuable, which is spending some of that money renegotiating Ibaka, basically trying to buy an extra year or two from him.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be that bad if you could, but if I'm him, there's no other rim protectors on the market in 2017. I want to go out and get that 5-year deal from them if I can, or 4 years somewhere else. I also want to get an idea, because my understanding is that they can't give him more than a 3-year extension, and that counts any remaining years in the contract. So he has 1 year left. Now you can only give him 2 more, and you know he's going to probably want to get 4, even if he does get renegotiated up a little bit this year. But I also, and if you wait 6 months, then after the extend and trade limitation period is passed, you could give him 3 years on the end. Maybe he thinks more about that. But I also don't want to just extend there until I know what the situation is going to be, how much I'm going to play, whether I'm happy there, whether we're any good or not. All those things I'd be really worried about if I were him. So I'm not going to just extend, snap my fingers immediately before I even know what it's like there. And I think that's actually that'll be the same thing with Jeff Teague and George Hill probably.
Yeah,
in their new destinations.
And those teams, I think, are a little bit potentially more likely to just keep some space held over, especially the Jazz. Like, we had that issue where the Jazz just couldn't really spend their money. And I know Orlando wants to spend, but it's possible that they just don't have enough worthwhile places to put it, and so they can keep $11, $12 million aside for Serge Ibaka, kind of just in case. And then if he doesn't want to do that, then that could also be a receptacle for a team that wants to do a salary dump to get under the tax or just save some money at the deadline. You can kind of serve two purposes with that money.
Other guys I like for them real quickly: Jarrell Arthur, Anthony Tolliver, Mirza Teletovic, and I actually think Mo Spates could be a pretty decent backup for them as just a guy from the center position who can stretch the floor a little bit and again help fix it, so especially with his newfound three-point range, fix it so like some of the non-shooters that they have aren't as big of a liability. So somebody, big guys who can shoot but actually could shoot threes, you know, not Jason Smith who's going to just take a billion long twos, and actually someone who's either a pure center or can play a little bit better defensively. Arthur and Tolliver would be two of my top targets for them.
Yeah, and at that same spot, they could also just use Andrew Nicholson if he gets a reasonable.
Yeah, but he doesn't defend like those guys. He's kind of slow afoot.
I think that he doesn't have a ton of, like, it doesn't seem like he has a ton of untapped potential. You know, like that's.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's not like super intense or anything. He's not like, I mean, there's a reason that he's like fallen out of the rotation a billion times during his period in Orlando.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And Arthur or somebody like that could also be a nice little stabilizing influence on this team, which is always good to have. And yeah, Orlando, I had kind of a vision for them also being their GM in the mock off season. Like, I kind of had an idea of, you know, maybe you go after a defensive center, you know, somebody who can kind of be there for the next couple of years and ideally try to get an upgraded point guard, but we knew that was unrealistic. And then when the trade happened, it just threw my whole concept of their present and their future out of whack.
Yeah, you could still make the argument that Oladipo had more potential than anybody on their team, maybe Gordon, but Gordon is not someone you see as being able to create with the ball in his hands anytime soon, and maybe Oladipo, I don't think he would have realized that, but he probably had a higher ceiling than any of these guys on this team, and he's always done better in the second half of the year. I mean, you remember he had like the broken face and stuff, like he's kind of had some injury reasons why, you know, maybe you could at least make the argument that the second half of his last 2 years is more representative. All right, anything else to say on these guys before we go?
Please tell me they're not going to pay Ryan Anderson a bunch of money this summer.
I can't do that. Yeah, I just have no idea what the plan was. And just, it's interesting, the five of these six teams are teams that have a buttload of space. Denver does too, but they have enough young talent where I'm higher on them than the rest of these teams. But the rest of these teams are kind of like stuck in the middle, not bad enough that they're going to be, even New Orleans with AD, we're talking about like who's going to take their money. Like all of these teams have max cap space and none of them are even remotely in the mix for guys that we would think of as being remotely worthy of a max contract. And even those guys are getting overpaid. So to me, these teams kind of really show just like how much money is out there and just that there's no one to spend it on at all. And that's why I felt like Orlando's move to open up all this cap space, like what was the point? Who did you think you were getting?
Yeah, and giving up on Tobias Harris early, getting zero assets for him when we're looking at, you know, the contracts that are being thrown out there now, and somebody would have thrown some sort of, even like a late first round pick probably would have been possible. I even think they could have gotten an asset for Channing Frye this summer. Like, it is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and
Maurice Harkless is the other one. I mean, like, I criticized Orlando a lot during the year for selling low on their guys, and this is when that comes home to roost.
All right, there you have it, Magic fans. You ready? You excited for this this free agency? Yeah, I mean, all these teams seem very kind of stuck in the middle, and I'm not really sure what I would be doing as them other than just pray that you can find something in free agency that's a semi-decent value. All right, thanks so much for listening. Obviously, if you haven't listened to the mock off season yet, please go back and listen to that. Always one of our best reviewed podcasts. If you like the show, you like the mock off season, you like this one, please share it. You know, give us an upvote on a Reddit thread, iTunes review, tell your friends, Facebook share, you know, whatever you can do. It was really helpful. This is kind of prime time for us to get in some new listeners. The numbers have been going up lately and we really appreciate all your support, but we'd like to kind of lock in some new listeners before the free agent period ends. Dan, you got anything to plug before we go?
Yeah. So the barrage of my off-season previews is going to continue. I think there's still five more that have to come out. And so the Nets came out on Monday. And then the ones I believe that are left are the Heat, the Pistons, the Wizards, the Jazz, the Bucks, and then the Kings actually just came out on Sunday. So just those five are left. And then I'm also going to do some other things in terms of the off season for the sporting news. And I'm already working on a kind of a Warriors concept idea. Basically, there are two paths for the summer, which will probably be somewhere on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Awesome. Don't forget about our sponsors too, that awesome Naked 3D body scanner. You can find out more about that at naked.fit/capspace. Capspace, easy to remember. We talk about it so often on the show. Also, Indochino with that Capspace code and Betterment as well with the Capspace URL. We will be back probably, I don't think we're going to be back until the very night that free agency starts. Like, we'll probably record super late on like some of the very first deals that get announced, you know, like Al Farouq Aminu did last year, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, like those. We'll probably be back then, so like super late on Thursday night, and then we'll have just keep recording pods daily over the off season over the weekend, probably as guys sign. Those will be some of our biggest episodes of the year, but we'll give the off season some time to marinate, this episode some time to marinate, and we'll be back on Thursday night, unless anything enormous happens between now and then. Talk to y'all then.